Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai. 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 Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing with Canto 10, Chapter 3, and the text for today is 15 through 17, so 15 will be on the board, and that's the verse we'll chant responsibly. Yate me vrikrita bhavas, tatate vrikrita saham. Nana virya pritak bhuta virayam janayanti hi yate me vikrita bhavas tatate vikrita saham. Nana virya pritak bhuta viryajam janasyanti hi yate me vrikrita bhavas tatate vrikrita saha. Nana virya pritak bhuta virajam janayanti hi. Please chant. Te me vikrita bhavas tatate vikrita saha. Nana virya pritak bhuta virajam janayanti hi. Yate me vikrita bhavas tatate vikrita saha. Nana virya pritak bhuta virajam janayanti hi. Te me vikrita bhavas tatate vikrita saha. Nana virya pritak bhuta virajam janayanti. Okay. So I'll continue with 15 through 17, the Sanskrit, and then we can do the word for word. Sanipatya samutpatya drishyanti nugata iva prageva vidyamayantvan natesha sambhavam evam bhavam buddhi anumeya lakshanair krinayar gupai sanapitat gunagraham anavritavad bair antaram nate sarvasya sarvatma atma vastunaham. So the word for text 15. Yata, as, ime, these material creations, made of material energy. Avrikitaha, actually not disintegrated. Bhavaha, with such a conception. Tata, similarly. Te, they. Vikritai Saha, association with these different elements, coming from the total material energy. Nana Virya, every element is full of different energies. Pritak, separated. Bhutaha, becoming. Virajam, the whole cosmic manifestation. Janayanti, create. He, indeed. So the translation by Srila Prabhupada. The Mahatattva, the total material energy, is undivided. But because of the material modes of nature, it appears to separate into earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Because of the living energy, the Jiva Bhuta, these separated energies combine to make the cosmic manifestation visible. But in fact, before the creation of the cosmos, the total energy is already present. Therefore, the total material energy never actually enters the creation. Similarly, although you are perceived by our senses because of your presence, you cannot be perceived by the senses, nor experienced by the mind or words, avan manasa gochara. With our senses, we can perceive some things, but not everything. For example, we can use our eyes to see, but not to taste. Consequently, you are beyond perception by the senses. Although in touch with the modes of material nature, you are unaffected by them. You are the prime factor in everything, the all-pervading, undivided supersoul. For you, therefore, there is no external or internal. You never entered the womb of Devaki, rather, you existed there already. Purport. The same understanding is explained by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 9.4. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matsani sarva bhutani na chaham teshavavistitaha. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not perceivable through the gross material senses. It is said that Lord Krishna's name, fame, pastimes, etc., cannot be understood by material senses. Only to one who is engaged in pure devotional service under proper guidance is he revealed, as stated in Brahma Samhita 5.38, Pramanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena Shanta Sadura Hirdayeshu Vilokayanti. One can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead Govinda always, within oneself and outside oneself, if one has developed the transcendental loving attitude towards him. Thus, for people in general, he is not visible. In the above-mentioned verse from Bhagavad Gita, therefore, it is said that although he is all-pervading, everywhere present, he is not conceivable by the material senses. But actually, although we cannot see him, everything is resting in him. As discussed in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the entire material cosmic manifestation is only a combination of his two different energies, the superior spiritual energy and the inferior material energy. Just as the sunshine is spread all over the universe, the energy of the Lord is spread all over the creation, and everything is resting in that energy. Yet one should not conclude that because he is spread all over, he has lost his personal existence. To refute such arguments, the Lord says, I am everywhere and everything is in me, but still I am aloof. For example, a king heads a government which is but the manifestation of the king's energy. The different governmental departments are nothing but the energies of the king, and each department is resting on the king's power, but still one cannot expect the king to be present in every department personally. That is a crude example. Similarly, all the manifestations that we see and everything that exists, both in the material world and in the spiritual world, are resting on the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The creation takes place by the diffusion of his different energies, and as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, he is everywhere present by his personal representation, the diffusion of his different energies. One may argue that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who creates a whole cosmic manifestation simply by his glance, cannot come within the womb of Devaki, the wife of Vasudev. To eradicate this argument, Vasudev said, quote, "My dear Lord, it is not very wonderful that you appeared within the womb of Devaki, for the creation was also made in that way. You were lying in the causal ocean as Mahavishnu, and by your breathing, innumerable universes came into existence. Then you entered into each of the universes as Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Then again, you expanded yourself as Sharadakshay Vishnu and entered into the heart of all living entities and entered even within the atoms. Therefore, your entrance into the womb of Devaki is understandable in the same way. You appear to have entered, but you are simultaneously all-pervading. We can understand your entrance and non-entrance from material examples. The total material energy remains intact, even after being divided into 16 elements. The material body is nothing but a combination of the five gross elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Whenever there is a material body, it appears that such elements are newly created, but actually the elements are always existing outside of the body. Similarly, although you appear as a child in the womb of Devaki, you're also existing outside. You're always in your abode, but still you can simultaneously expand yourself into millions of forms. One has to understand your appearance with great intelligence because the material energy is also emanating from you. You are the original source of the material energy. So this is still in quotation. You are the original source of the material energy, just as the sun is the source of the sunshine. The sunshine cannot cover the sun globe, nor can the material energy, being an emanation from you, cover you. You appear to be in the three modes of material energy, but actually the three modes of material energy cannot cover you. This is understood by the highly intellectual philosophers. In other words, although you appear to be within the material energy, you are never covered by it. End of quote. We hear from the Vedic version that the Supreme Brahman exhibits his effulgence, and therefore everything is illuminated. We can understand from Brahma Samhita that the Brahma Jyoti or the Brahman effulgence emanates from the body of the Supreme Lord, and from the Brahman effulgence all creation takes place. It is further stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the Lord is the support of the Brahman effulgence. Originally, he is the root cause of everything, but persons who are less intelligent think that when the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes within this material world, he accepts material qualities. Such conclusions are not mature, but are made by the less intelligent. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadaya Bhutale Srimatram Paraswami Tinamine Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pashtacha Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Asadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Panchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha. So Vasudev is speaking to Lord Krishna directly, and Lord Krishna has appeared as his child, and by his speaking he is giving an example to explain that Lord Krishna never entered the womb of Devaki, but rather that he existed there already. So the example Vasudev gives is that the Mahatattva and the other elements, they enter the universe, but they also don't enter it. So if one were to examine Srila Suta Goswami's description of the features of the Supreme Lord, who expands himself as the Triple Purusha, incarnations of Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and Shiradakshay Vishnu, we get an explanation. So this is Srila Suta Goswami speaking. In the beginning of the creation, the Lord first expanded himself in the universal form of the Purusha incarnation and manifested all the ingredients for the material creation. The quote carries on, but I'm particularly focusing on that. The rest of the quote is, "And thus at first there was the creation of the 16 principles of material action. This was for the purpose of creating the material universe." So that's from Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, in the second chapter, in the first verse. So this expansion of the first of the three Purushas, Purusha features of the Lord in the material creation, and this form known as Shiradakshay Vishnu, is the first of the three Vishnu incarnations. And in fact, it's from the skin holes of Shiradakshay Vishnu that the innumerable universes are brought into being. So this creation that is set into motion is such that the Mahatattva is set loose. So the Mahatattva refers to all the ingredients the material world that's going to be manifesting itself, and this even includes the conditioned souls. So this Mahatattva is divided into 16 parts. So there's the 5 gross material elements, the 11 working instruments or senses. And Krishna himself, he calls these his separated material energies. So those are earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And he says, altogether these 8 constitute my separated material energies. That verse is, and Srila Prabhupada referenced that in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there was a discussion on this. So this particular verse touches on it. It's 7.4. Bhurapo nalo vayu kam mano buddhir evacha ahankara itiyam me bina prakrit astadha. So this original, undifferentiated form of the total material energy from which the material world is manifest is said by Srila Prabhupada to actually assemble itself in a corner of the unlimited spiritual sky. So it's within these ingredients that haven't yet taken on specialized differences of the material that's going to come into being, that the universes are produced collectively by Shiradakshay Vishnu. So the explanation for why it is that this undifferentiated total material energy or the material creation made of material energy is said to enter the universe is that the creation is set forth by Mahavishnu. So it's not an actual fact that the Mahatattva enters the universe, for it's already present and is merely assembled. Or as Vasudev puts it in this verse, therefore the total material energy never actually enters the creation. It has to do with the ideas one is holding, and this is just to put into perspective that particularly what Vasudev is looking at here, that the total material energy never actually enters the creation. It all has to do with Mahavishnu taking charge and letting it loose and assembling things. So in Vasudev's simile, in the same way that the total material energy never actually enters the creation because it is present before the actual creation, so too Krishna appears to enter the womb of Devaki. He's not entered the womb. There's a statement by Srila Suta Goswami on this topic too, of the creation of the universes, that I'm making a connection with, and this is Srila Suta Goswami. It is believed that all the planetary systems are situated on the extensive body of the Purusha, but he has nothing to do with the created material ingredients. His body is eternally in spiritual existence, par excellence. So this kind of connects that the whole material manifestation is being assembled in the spiritual sky. It's been, those ingredients are being let loose or being released to start acting by Mahavishnu. And also, his body itself is continuously existing within the spiritual sky. So that's from Srimad Bhagavatam 133. So the Lord is extending his potency in the form of the Mahatattva, which includes all the material ingredients. So the reason that this statement by Srila Suta Goswami applies is that the extension of the power of the Lord and the Lord himself, the person, are not different. So even though the power of the Lord and he himself, they're one and the same, in one sense, all at the same time, the Mahatattva, or the total material ingredients, including the conditioned souls, are also part of him. And they're not different from the Lord. So this eternal form of the Lord, it exists prior to the creation of the Mahatattva. And in addition, the eternal form of the Lord is spiritual or transcendental to the modes of material nature. So the explanation by Srila Prabhupada is that the same transcendental form of the Lord is plainly shown by his internal power, because he has that capacity to develop transcendental forms. So this means that due to his internal power, this capacity to develop, the formation of incarnations are always of the same transcendental quality, because it's coming from the transcendental being. And it doesn't have any touch of the Mahatattva. So this is borne out by Srila Suta Goswami, because again he says, this is him, this form, the second manifestation of the Purusha, is the source and indestructible seed of multifarious incarnations within the universe. From the particles and portions of this form, different living entities like demigods, men, and others are established. So again, even the incarnations are coming from that original transcendental form, the second manifestation of the Purusha. And that manifestation of the Purusha is allowing for even the demigods, persons, to actually become established in their forms. So the reason given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is that the Lord, although he's perceived, is that he doesn't accept the qualities of matter. And those qualities of matter, I mean, the essence of them is that there's some suffering involved in material qualities. Because when there's a covering in a particular kind of way, then one takes on the qualities or that way of being. So there's some suffering with taking on that way of being, because then one is beginning to identify with that way of being and is forgetting that connection with the original source. So the material dwelling place of the living being, meaning that form, that material form that then comes to be taken on, it's obtained by the various activities that have been performed and the resultant actions. So a person comes to live within these conditions, and hence he's identifying with that body that's resulted from those previous actions and activities, yeah. And then he's living within the conditions that include the suffering and the distress. So in fact, the three modes of material nature are under the control of Lord Krishna. And as soon as the living being becomes aloof from the activities of the body, then he becomes free from the resultant actions. And this becomes so because Lord Krishna, he's able to be understood by the intelligence. So the intelligence can assist one to get that becoming free from those resultant actions from previous activities, or the effects of the resultant actions. So the fact that the Lord is full of bliss is what allows him to not accept the qualities of matter, which brings about suffering. So he's in spiritual bliss, can't be touched by different ways of being and the qualities that develop from identifying with those ways of being, which is the case with the conditioned souls that come to emerge when Mahavishnu begins to release them. Now, Krishna explains this. Know that all states, this is Krishna talking, know that all states of being, be they of goodness, passion, or ignorance, are manifested by my energy. I am in one sense everything, but I am independent. I am not under the control of material nature, for they, on the contrary, are within me. So it's a direct statement from Lord Krishna, and that's from Bhagavad Gita 7:12. So Krishna isn't subject to material nature, although these ways of being are emanating from him, you know, meaning being in goodness or being in passion or being in ignorance. So this is Krishna's special characteristic. And this is opposed, of course, to living beings who, when they're exposed to objects of touch or sound externally, they come to experience internal expressions of grief. So that's the difficulty with conditioned souls. And they come to form concepts or beliefs that are not in accord with the facts. So finally, Vasudev's understanding hinges on his having transcendental knowledge or realized spiritual knowledge. So it's through work performed for the Lord and his satisfaction, which gives the performer a purified state of existence, a state that's free from that kind of affection or affinity for material things, because then one comes to have spiritual knowledge, and that's actually what's freeing one from that connection with the material elements. So whatever work is done in this life for the satisfaction of the Lord is called bhakti yoga, or transcendental loving service to the Lord. And what is called knowledge is a concomitant factor. That's comes from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.55, and this is Narada Muni speaking. So actually it's hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, as Vasudeva is doing in his praising Lord Krishna, that's allowing one to simultaneously become enlightened by the grace of Lord Krishna. So I'm going to stop there, because this was as far as I was able to explore this in all its complexity. So if there's some thoughts on this matter.
Here in the translation says that the material energy almost euphemistically says that it is eternal. It was already present before the creation. So who created the material energy if it was present already before the creation?
Yeah, so it's... The question is, who's creating the material energy? Because there's mention in the verse that the material energy was already present. So, the particular Purusha incarnations of Lord Krishna, they take on that particular role of dealing with the material energy and assembling it. So in fact, it's existing within the form of Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu is within the spiritual sky, and in some corner, as Srila Prabhupada puts it, that assembly is going to take place. So the creation as such, one can't talk about creation, it's already existent. But rather it's getting assembled. So it hasn't taken on specialized functions, but then the specialized functions further on down the line start to take place through the different Purusha incarnations, where finally Shivadakshai Vishnu is entering into the specialized forms, even into each minute atom. So the material energy as such is not created, it's already existent within the form of Mahavishnu.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna, first of all, thank you for explaining these rather technical aspects of Krishna's appearance. I just one little comment came to my mind where you were explaining how the living entity actually gets on that platform of not being affected by the three modes of material nature and being aloof of that. So there's also that explanation where there's a row of four or five verses in the Prema Vivada where it is very nicely explained how, you know, as reciprocation of the living entity surrendering and calling out in helplessness to Krishna, he immediately responds and he builds a protective fort around the living entity so that the material energy can't affect him. So you were touching upon the intelligence. Okay, intelligence plays also a role, but ultimately that leads us actually to crying out to Krishna and surrendering deep in the heart, the intelligence brings us to that point. And only then Krishna reveals, and Krishna actually protects. So this is quite amazing. There's also that verse where the three modes of material nature, the ocean of the material world, shrinks down to the size of a hoof print of a calf. Right? I'm sure you know that one. Which is, you know, a very nice illustration of how it becomes so easy to step over a hoof print of a calf, nobody even notices, you know, filled with water. So this whole ocean of material existence shrinks down to just a little hoof print there. But that is really by the Lord's mercy of just surrendering deep in the heart and hopelessly calling out to him, really. You know? So it's quite mysterious how it works that we also get on that platform of the Lord, like the Lord being not affected, living entity can actually also get there. So that's quite amazing, I find. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much for particularly contrasting this huge material energy, all these 16 elements that first, you know, don't have their specialized functions, then come to have their specialized functions, and then here's the finally the body, the human body. And you were highlighting that you'd noticed that intelligence played a role in bringing one to Krishna, and what you were particularly contributing, much to my appreciation, was the fact that actually this, indeed the intelligence brings one to Krishna, but then it's Krishna who's building out the but it's actually Krishna who's creating the protective area within which to operate, such that the material energy is not even impinging upon the living being. And you very nicely, pointed out the diminution of the effect of the material energy, such that it's literally, you know, as small as the hoof print of a calf in terms of its effect on the living entity. So indeed, the part of that, if I may respond, part of that protection that is coming it is resting on the knowledge that one is getting through one's hearing, through one's chanting, but the particular very strong emphasis that at least struck me from reading Vasudev's glorification of Krishna was that actually it's the very glorification that is in some sense giving entrance to Krishna's spiritual energy, which is that protective factor. So it means that one's investing one's consciousness in the topics of Krishna and one's relationship with him. So that investment of consciousness I mean, relying a lot on the intelligence initially, and certainly, but the investment of consciousness is attracting Krishna and keeping one within the protection of the spiritual energy. At least that's how I'm understanding. So I'm just responding to your very nice contribution. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna Masterji, thank you for your class. When I read this purport, Prabhupada was mentioning that we could see the Lord by Premanjana Charita Bhakti Viloshanena. So that brought to mind a famous quote by Bhakti Siddhanta, but I like the way it's put in the Bhakti Siddhanta by Bhav. The chapter is called The Seer and the Seen. It's a famous quote, but I like how it's put in this biography. It mentions that Bhakti Siddhanta says, we should not think of the Supreme Lord as an object of our vision. Instead, we should meditate on how we can acquire the qualification to become worthy objects of his vision. It's usually quoted, don't try to see God, act in such a way that God wants to see you. So we hear in chapter 6 of the Gita, that if we have the proper mentality, then the Lord wants to see us. This reminds me in chapter 6, verse 30, Krishna says, from one who sees me, everyone sees everything in me. I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So there's one quote that says, we may be at the right place, at the right time, with the right people, but if we have the wrong mentality, then nothing can give us happiness. On the other hand, we may be at the wrong place, at the wrong time, with the wrong people, but if we have the right mentality, then everything can give us happiness. There's a couple of examples, and I have a question. The demon Katsavirya Arjuna, he worshipped Daitreya to become powerful. He had beauty, he had wealth, he had strength, he had 10 arms, he could defeat anyone. So when he came to the ashram of Jabba Agni, Lord Parashuram's father, Jabna Agni didn't criticize him or try to attack him. He served him with prasada. And he became envious. How is this person serving me and my entire army? He found out that he had a Surabhi cow, a accommodating cow that could fulfill anything. And he stole the cow. He was at the right place at the right time with the right person, but he had this wrong mentality, envy. Nothing could give him happiness. And we see so many pastimes like Haridas Thakur. He was beaten 22 marketplaces. He was at the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong people. But since he had the right mentality, everything could give him happiness. Lord Chaitanya said, my Sugan Chakra was ready to cut off the Muslim's head, but because you only had love for the Muslims, my chakra was powerless. So Kazimir Arjuna made a mountain out of a molehill, and Haridas Thakur made a molehill out of a mountain. So what are some steps? How do we know in our spiritual life that we're, you know, making mountains out of molehills? Because if in the scriptures they're making mountains out of molehills, what's to speak of us in Kali Yuga? So how do we determine whether we're over necessarily exaggerating problems when they're really not that big of a deal, and that causes us to create offenses, then maybe moves our taste in Krishna consciousness? So how is one supposed to, you know, distinguish that?
So the question is, one may be exaggerating difficulties, and that kind of exaggeration may take one away from Krishna consciousness, but how to discern when that is the case and when it isn't the case. Well, staying in Krishna consciousness means that actually Krishna is the object of one's vision. So you brought up in the beginning, before you came to your question, that particular point, and you were perhaps even saying that rather, you know, it's necessary for Krishna to be able to see us, but actually in order for Krishna to be able to see us, he does have to be the object of our vision. So such that we're utilizing those material senses, even the subtlest of the material senses, the mind, to keep him within one's vision. So it means that one's particularly hearing about him, and something of his activities, which then we need to hold within what we've heard and reflect on it. The ongoing reflection will allow us to make proper discernment for when we've stepped out of that, something was kindly brought up here, when we've stepped out of that protective internal potency of Lord Krishna. So it's recognizable quite graphically sometimes when one has moved away from holding Krishna as the object of one's vision, because inevitably the heart will be reflecting on matters that cause agitation to the mind. So particularly one may be reflecting on something that is bringing up emotions that we can recognize are causing agitation. So if the emotions that are emerging are emotions of anger, or the emotions that are emerging are some sort of greediness for, you know, different material objects, or if the emotion that's emerging is one of perhaps looking at somebody else and making comparisons with oneself, then in that kind of disturbed frame of mind, one can understand that one's reflection, internal reflection, is shifting from holding Krishna as the object of one's vision to internal reflection on matters that one's giving importance to at the expense of one's Krishna consciousness. So those matters may need attention indeed, but not to the extent that one is sacrificing particularly the hearing process. So the hearing process would be, I guess, the key factor that would allow for proper discernment for when one's vision is falling away or it's not remaining focused on Krishna, when that hearing decreases or one loses a taste for it, then one knows, I've lost Krishna as the object of my vision. Thank you.
May I add something little to this, which is also maybe some little advertisement for the seminar which we will have over the weekend? That actually, as long as we have material desires and attachments, we can't really objectively assess ourselves. And we actually do need sheltering relationships. Yes. Otherwise, you know, that's one reason why we have lost so many nice devotees over the last 40, 50 years. Because in my humble observation, we have not really understood the importance of sheltering relationships. and that will be the topic.
So please come and explore it.
Well, we're grateful that we're going to get an opportunity to immerse ourselves in a topic that will keep us sheltered so that indeed we keep Krishna as the object of our vision. So thank you very much. We're grateful that you've come to perform that function within this community, and indeed may we indeed benefit that that emphasis that you're putting on relationships, that we can actually take that in our lives so that we protect it from the ravages caused by one's reflection of things in the mind that are so much connected to previous actions and the resultant reactions. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.